And welcome back to the wrestling podcast. That's wrestling spelled W-R-S-T-L-I-N-G, all of the graps without the E. That's no World Wrestling Entertainment, no All Elite, just two guys, eyes on the prize and ears to the street. But don't get it twisted. Me and G, we ain't anti-E, we're simply pro wrestling. My name is Liam Wyatt, loving the intro as always. This man is Gareth Wood.
Hey.
And you, my friends, have found yourself on the Inside the Ropes podcast network. Welcome back for the 10th episode of the wrestling podcast. Slap an X on that mother hubbard. We done did it against all odds. And big thanks to all the guys at Inside the Ropes for believing and giving us the platform to do this. And a huge, huge thank you to every single one of you that tune in on a weekly basis and check us out. We really do appreciate it. Genuinely didn't think we'd get to double digits. And here we are. So thank you so much for the love and support. For the second thing that I didn't think I'd ever be saying, we got some exciting news for you, ladies and gentlemen, especially just before Christmas. We got merch. Merch! That's right, merchandising. Yes, indeed. If you want to represent the wrestling podcast, well, now you can. Shop.itrwrestling.com has got what you need. We got hoodies, we got t-shirts, we got mugs, we're going to have all sorts of stuff. It's all up there. So why not check it out, grab yourself one of those things and represent your boys and loving all of the graps. But don't stop there. Look, you know, the Inside the Ropes podcast network has so many great shows. You know, we've got the Power Slam podcast. We've got What's Going Down, Queen Street Posse, The Great Debate, The Wrestling Roast. Everybody's represented. You've got t-shirts, you've got bags, you've got all sorts on there. Get yourself over there and check it out just before Christmas. Anyway, enough with the plugs. Never thought we'd do plugs, but we did. Big G, we got a great show coming up. It's a special
one.
We do.
It was a bumper episode this week.
Yes, indeed.
We had a really fun chat with Indian wrestler Balianaki, who currently resides in Japan. He told us all about his really interesting wild road from India to Japan to Thailand to England. You know, he's been all over.
It's an incredible journey. I've never heard a story like it, actually.
100% not heard a wrestler take possibly a more difficult road to success than he has. And it's really, really endearing.
Yeah. And, you know, when we get to the portion of the interview where Balian's telling us about Gato Move and Choco Pro, the promotion in Japan he currently wrestles for alongside Emi Sakura, the way they view wrestling, I genuinely think, is so far ahead of the curve. So make sure you check that bit out. It's so, so interesting. But what a lovely guy Balian was. He gave us so much of his time. I really think you're going to enjoy this one. So this is a special one, episode 10, for everybody who from day one has been asking us to check out Choco Pro. Well, this is the first of two episodes where we're going to do it. So let's take you over to the interview with Balianaki. And we are back, and it is the interview section of the podcast. And Gato Move, Choco Pro fans, you are in luck because we have the one and only Balianaki with us today. Welcome, sir.
Thank you very much for having me. This has been a long one in the making, and I'm really happy to be here.
It has. We very much appreciate your patience in dealing with us.
Yeah, I know. Totally understood.
We made it. So we got... Oh gosh, a ton of questions to get through. So I just want to kick off right at the top with you. So for anybody that hasn't seen you, and you know, in terms of people that listen to that podcast, they may well be in the minority, but for anybody that hasn't seen you, how would you describe yourself to wrestling fans that are unfamiliar with your work?
That is a fascinating one. For describing myself would be, I am someone who got fascinated with Japanese style while I was training. Didn't even know Japanese style existed while I started training, because I'm from India and the only thing exists there is WWE. It exists there grandly, very, very grandly. But other than that, nothing is like, especially like 5-6 years ago, 7 years ago? 2012, December 2012, when I started. But I just got hung up on the fact that I wanted to go to Japan. It really wasn't like a thing that I could go to Japan at that point, especially because of the position wasn't that good. It, like a visa wise too, just like the practical fact of me going there was a bit weird. So I did show up here in 2015 and like got here 15? Yes, actually 15. And then really got 16. Then I really got here to actually get to come here on around 2017 at the end of it. So because I'm from some place which doesn't really have an industry, when I got here, the first thing, most of the conversation I would have in kind of English throwing up, because I didn't speak Japanese at that point, was letting people actually make them believe that there is wrestling in India. That's where it would start. And because that is where we're starting, I can't really have anything to show in any sense unless I'm training with them that I can actually wrestle. So the way I would wrestle, everything I used to do was just like put up and on the side. And I changed my style into the most trustful, you could say, the kind of style you could wrestle that would, you know, be easy to work with and would also get me like them believing in that. Okay, this guy's pretty safe. He can really work. It's okay. And also like the way it would start would also be with a test, because I really have zero credentials and I showed up like a maniac here with nothing. Like really didn't talking to anybody or anything. I just showed up to Tokyo. I'm like, I'll work it out somehow. So that is what happened. I had to work it out. So I was very lucky though. I was really, really lucky because I ended up meeting Masa Takanashi from DDT in my like 1 month before I was about to show up in Japan while I was doing a show in Singapore. So when I show up here, he told me like, oh, you're coming to Japan? Like, let me know. He's a very, very generous and like really good person. So I just messaged him when I showed up here because that is the only thing I knew about here. So he goes, okay. So I show up for training for DDT and like got a move because he's like very, very confined in both of those places. Not confined, like very, very solidified in those two places. And I would go to training, show up for training. If you can train, if you can do something while you're training with them, they kind of believe you. They give you a chance. You get a match. If you can perform good on the match, you're in. That's like those are two versions. So unless they think you're good enough in the training, you don't get a test. Now they think you're kind of can. You might be able to. Then they give you a test match and 5 minutes. You do it. You don't know that at the point that it's a test. You only think it's a match. But it is actually like in that sense. So if you pass, you start doing shows. If you don't, then thank you very much.
Wow. Okay. Goodness. Okay. That is a process. I like that.
Because of that, my style, like I took a long time for me to really incorporate what I wanted to do as a wrestler instead of what I needed to do as a wrestler. And those two things together now, I think really, really would define how I wrestle. I would combine myself in like doing very basic things and just throwing in kind of flashy stuff to spice it up. I think that is how I wrestle. I really feel that way.
So just taking it back a step then. Yeah. So what are your earliest memories in wrestling? You know, what inspired you to get involved?
Well, as you can see, like WWE is a really big thing in India. Like actually like Hollywood style, Bollywood style kind of superstardom. Like John Cena could stop Delhi. I'm not joking. If John just showed up in the middle of Delhi, the city would stop. That's like a Bollywood star level of, like really stardom, movie star level of fame. And fame is actually quite different in India as well. It's not like, okay, he's a famous person. No, goddamn, he's a famous. Like, fame is a powerful commodity in India. Okay. That is even now, it's like, it's like the 60 years ago, Clean Street would like, just people would lose their mind or Beatles kind of fandom. And the stars would still have this in India, especially. So WWE, because it has been on TV for the last 25 years, and it is the second most favorite sport in India, in a 1.4 billion people country after cricket. WWE is number two. So
goodness.
Yes. So that is the level of, that is why you see them in recent years doing a lot of things for India. So, because it is, I think, their second biggest market in the world. Probably. Wow. Probably, I think. I think they just made a $200 million deal, I think. $200 million, or I think $250 million or something for like a two-year, three-year deal. Yeah, with Sony, actually. So because of that, every, like my cousins, everybody, before cable came to where I used to live in my village, I would just know Undertaker and The Rock and Triple H. I just knew the names. I had no idea what they were. I actually got in wrestling. By the time I got into wrestling, it was around 2007, 8. I was like 13, 14. Is when John Cena and Edge with Lita were feuding. That is when I got in. So for most people, one of the not really good times to get into wrestling. But to me, that is the only like framework at that point. And also DX was doing their last run, I think. So to me, at that point, because I was 12, I think 12 and a half, John Cena was the man. it was at the point of him like really going full on 100% face, like just baby face. Mm-hmm. And so I really loved the whole, I actually was kind of weird about it too, because I thought it was the best entertainment. I didn't really look at it as like a fighting sport, because there was boxing and other things as well. But I really thought like they have everything. Like there was romance going on in the backstage. There's like people backstabbing each other. There's like fights. There's like actually like stories in the background, and there's action as well. So I really thought it was like a live Hollywood movie, just better.
Yeah. it's a production,
yes,
isn't it? Yeah,
I really thought that, because it really had everything. There was like, you know, love stories. There was like, you know, romances, there's people with managers, there's like segments in background, there's like friendships and betrayals, and there's like good guys and bad guys. This was a whole thing. And I thought this was awesome. Like, I don't know why more people don't watch it. But I'm like, yeah, a lot of people, like, makes sense. It's so popular in India and stuff. Yeah. But as to why I became a wrestler, that is actually a very, it's a running theme. It was a very, I'm a very lazy person. So I couldn't get serious about anything. Even when I was in high school, I was about to end high school, and how the Indian system worked, it is like I had like maths and science and like the hard subjects. So I was either going to be like doctorate or engineering or some kind of like a heavy subject. And I had no interest in them, even though I was studying them. So I ended up doing nothing. I applied for zero colleges, I'm like, okay, let's just take time to really see what I want to do. And when I thought about everything, I really thought two things. First, what would be fun to do? And second, what would be like, if I had to imagine what would be the hardest job, if I like really want to do it, what it would be. And I couldn't think anything harder than becoming a WWE star. I didn't even knew wrestling was a thing. I didn't even know the name of pro wrestling, by the way, which is very bizarre. I didn't know the name sports of pro wrestling, because it doesn't exist. There's WWE, and that's the only know. So I'm like, becoming like a worker, you could say, or a wrestler for WWE, in my head, was the hardest thing in the world. Because let's just say a Bollywood star would be harder, some could say. But I know how to become a Bollywood star. I didn't even know what the hell they were doing, because I didn't know it was a pro wrestling. I didn't even know the name of it or how to go about it. I'm like, do you train? Do you do bodybuilding? What the hell you do to be a wrestler? I had no idea. No joking. I searched the internet for like months to really find like, is somebody doing that kind of thing in India? And there was no school or anything. So those mix up of me just trying to do something crazy and it's seeming incredibly fun to do is how I ended up trying to be a wrestler. Kind of foreshadows the fact that I showed up to Tokyo with no plan. Like, it really does foreshadow that. That is a level of stupidity that people shouldn't do.
Absolutely. You obviously seem like a man who likes a challenge / likes to make life difficult for themselves. Yeah.
I really should stop doing that. It is not easy. I did that in London too. I showed up in London without telling anybody to after Tokyo.
That's incredible. Just show up with your gear and hope for the best.
I really did that too, again.
Yeah, that's crazy. I love that.
The fact that you've done that on more than one occasion and been successful doing it shows that there really must be something about you. You know, that these people are taking a chance on somebody, you know, an unknown quantity, and they've gone, no, we like this guy, we're going to put him on our shows.
Yeah, wrestling is just kind. There's enough kind people in wrestling that someone like me can kind of survive in it. That's how I think. I think there's like enough good people left so that somebody who's like just showed up like me, they were like, oh, you know what? We're going to have, even though what you did was pretty stupid, we're going to still give him a chance. I think there are enough good people left in wrestling.
Very good.
How difficult was it then to come by an actual training school in India?
Oh, I actually didn't have a school. I just found, very lucky that I found another crazy person that was as crazy as me. And we actually showed up at the place on the same day, which is like very coincidental. It's very good coincidence for me. I actually found a guy who was like a big wrestling fan, like pretty big wrestling fan. And he had made a ring. I don't know how he made it. He got some plants or something. But in Punjab, which was actually quite far from where I am, like a 9 to 10 hour drive. Yeah, so it's like in the heart of Punjab too. Like people speak pure Punjabi. There's no Hindi or anything, but people kind of know Hindi, but it's like pure Punjabi place. Oh, you see like hardcore turban dudes everywhere. So in called Jalandhar, which actually, by the way, coincidentally, the same place Kali ended up opening his academy too, in the same city. I don't know why he did that, because he's not from there as well. He's actually from Himachal, but he opened there as well. Maybe it's because like we were training there and it kind of had like a feel like people go there or something. Right. But the one guy had like a ring and he rented a garage or something, like pretty rundown place. And he just had a ring. It was like 20 by 20 ring, pretty old style, like suspension in the center. And like a pretty old school, like from the 70s kind of ring, pretty hard. And we just showed up. At his, I'm like, do you have that? Like, and he goes, I have wrestling school. I'm not joking. He goes that way. And I go, really? So like, who trains? Like, who's the person teaching people? And he goes, me. I'm like, okay, I understand. So like, okay, but you have a ring. So I went to the city that he had the ring in, because it is his ring and I had to use it. So I just went to that city and we would pay him to use the ring. And me and one of my friend called Zoro, from Jammu and Kashmir, one of my best buddies in wrestling. We showed up on the same, around the same week, and he told us to come on the same day. And we showed up, I think on 24th of December, I think, 2012. So around then, and we just, both of us for 1.5 year, did nothing than to beat each other up, realized, it hurts. Let's not do that. Let's do something else. And let's do it some other way. And yeah, we really just went with that elimination process into something that might look like wrestling. He really hung in there with me. That was, just remembering it is something. Because we would, like, he was a fan of British wrestling. He was really a big fan of Marty Jones. And he would like, yeah, he was really into like the British style. Even though this was just two people training, we were very different because our interest was very different. He would show up with like my old Marty Jones videos and we would just sit and watch with like 0.25% speed and just see what he is doing and just imitate it as many times as possible. Or like, just download like New Japan old school drills from like Inoki times where they have a documentary or something. Or Big Japan, or anybody who has any kind of wrestling resume out there that they have as like seminar or anything that we could find on internet anywhere. We don't care if it's like we are downloading it from torrent or anything. No care at all. Just get everything we possibly can, watch it and try to do it. And just really kept doing it. Did pretty, like, gosh. I remember because nobody told us, I trained for the starting 6 months from right to right, like Mexican style. And then when we watched like Japanese videos, we went, oh, goddamn, people do it from the left. So it's just no joke. One day I'm like, hold on a sec. Because before that, we really were watching a lot of Japanese drills or anything. Around 6 months when we really started watching it. Because actually, I didn't know about there was wrestling in Japan. Around 5 months of, because he was a big fan of King's Road, around 5 months, and we kind of became friends. We really started showing each other, like, I love this and I love this. And he showed a match to me from, like, Wrestle Kingdom between Hiroshi Tanahashi and Minoru Suzuki from Wrestle Kingdom. And I had never seen a wrestling outside of WWE till that point.
Oh, wow.
So,
gosh,
it was like a bomb went off in my head. I'm like, hold on a sec, what the hell are these guys doing? So I really became, like, fascinated in first from that moment, because it was nothing like the wrestling style was so contrast, especially, you know, Suzuki's matches. It is so basic and so much, the focus is such so different in what they're trying to convey compared to a WWE match or a main event, because it was a big match. And for a match to go to 35 minutes and for them to do 25 minutes of elbows and, like, really just beating each other for 20 minutes out of the 35, it is like, hold on, they're just really slugging it out. That is, like, most of what they're doing. But they're really doing it really good. Like, I can tell it was high-level stuff, but I just couldn't, like, all the framework that has had been in my mind, I couldn't fit it anywhere. It was just like, I'm like, hold on a sec, it doesn't fit. And it just, I couldn't wrap my head around it. So I really went into watching it and really got, like, I just ended up loving that style. And so we went into, like, hold on a sec, let's watch more of the Japanese training stuff. And we go, hold on a sec, we are doing it from the right. That's not, we should do it from the left. And we change it up around, like, five months into wrestling. But thanks to that, I can actually do both styles now. Like, it's easier for me to change it to right. Like, I can do from left and right either way. So, yeah.
So it helped in the end then.
Yes, a good ending.
So when did you have your first sort of official match then?
It was 28th or 29th of January 2015. Okay. And I started training in December 2012, and I had my first match in January 2015, around 2 years or something. So around 1.5 years when I was still training a lot, we would like just meet, because we are only two person. We would just have simulation matches. Let's just have 5 minute matches. If we are opener, let's just have like mid 10, 15. Then we would wrestle like one match, two matches, three matches, and then just train every day, all day. We had nothing else to do. So around 1.5 years has went by, 18 months. And at that point, I was enough interested in wrestling, and we were doing enough matches together, just two person. I would record it, and I started talking. I really like it. The idea of going to Japan is in my head now, but I don't know how to go about it. I have no idea how the independent wrestling works. I know there is independent wrestling, but other than that, I just really have no framework to work with. So I started I think I messaged somebody in Japan with like Google Translate, and I just channel my videos and stuff. So it kind of conveyed what I wanted to do. And they go like, okay, if you ever are interested and in Japan, let us know. We will train together or something. And I go, I really want to go there. How about you help me out? Like, I can't go by myself. If you think I am someone who can really come up, then you, like, please. And they go, okay. He was actually, I think, a promoter from Freedom in back, and he was running, I think there was like a very indie company. It doesn't exist anymore, but it kind of got me in, which his name was Hashimoto, like really, really helpful person who really helped me out because had no reason to do so. So I go like, would you help me out? And he goes, yeah, sure, why not? And he would send me an invitation letter and stuff. And I was 19 and a half when I was doing it. So I was talking to there, and because we couldn't, I had zero Japanese and he had zero English. So he just kind of sent me, do you know any Japanese person? And I go, hold on a sec. Luckily, a cousin of mine was working for a Japanese company, and he knew, he had like a Japanese friend that he used to work with. And I go like, oh, yeah, kind of. So I went to my cousin, like, would you like hook me up with that Japanese dude? He was, yeah. And he was living in India, like working full time. So he spoke English as well. And I just went to him, and he kind of, it took like 6 months just to like, for me to like get a letter from him so I can go to the embassy. But I did got it somehow. And the embassy went, no, we really can't give you a visa. And from there, it became a very different kind of thing, because up until that point, was the problem for me to going to Japan was wrestling. Would I be able to wrestle? Would somebody would, you know, let me a spot to wrestle there? And the problem then became, would the country Japan let me in?
Oh, wow.
So the problem became twofold. And it has been more of an adventure for me to the passport I have, which also gives into the fact that why I am so reckless in what I try to do, because I can't really guarantee, even now, someone, let's just say, I can't really guarantee a UK promoter that I 100% would show up for your show if you book me, because I'm never sure would the country let me in if I do. Gosh, promise. Wow. So I always try to, like, it is also stupid. I should say that I will show up, because now, mostly because of the record I have, they kind of do let me in for the, at least for the last three times. But I can't really, my mindset, I can't really have it somehow is to promise and not show up, because that happened once. I was supposed to, I wrestled for SP in Singapore before showing up in Japan, and the promoter somehow, for some reason, kind of ended up liking me. And I went over a guy who has, like, in all, I think in 5 or 6 years, I'm the only one who have beaten him. So, and the promoter, he was the powerhouse of the promotion. And for some reason, the promoter goes, I kind of like you for some reason, like my style or something. And I was supposed to go for the title. I like come back one more time and wrestle for the title. It was a number one. It became like one day prior. It was just supposed to be a match. Then the promoter goes, we're going to make it a number one contendership match. And then around after we have actually like the tomorrow's the match, the night before he went, you're going over. I'm like, okay. And it became like way big of a thing than it was supposedly be. And I was supposed to go back. I was going from Japan to Singapore and coming back to Japan while I was living in Japan. And that's when I went to board, I had the visa and everything. But when I go there, for some reason, the airlines and the embassies went, would you wait a minute? And they just told me to wait till the flight flew. And then I go,
oh, gosh.
It's not, it's not a refundable flight. It's not like the promoter. Wrestling isn't really that, indie wrestling is that big that they can have like refundable flights or something. And I couldn't make the show because, so I just called the promoter up. I'm like, dude, they just didn't let me in. So, and they were kind of like going on and on about it. Like, we would let you in for one day. I'm like, what do you mean one day? I have a visa for 4 days. And even if I'm there anyway, what the hell is the difference between 4 days and one day?
Mm.
If I'm someone who's not, like, let's just say a dangerous person, would be dangerous in one day too? Like, what's the difference between 4 days and one day? And they went from 1 day to 2 days. We'll give you 2 days. I'm like, I wouldn't make the show if it's 2 days. So from that point, it also like more solidified in me. I can't just promise and not show up. That is one of the biggest reasons. Yeah. I just can't. I show up first and then go, okay, even if it's harder, now I will definitely be on your show. That is why I actually did that in London.
Just very conscientious then.
I think it's more, I was to begin with that way. And Japan made it more so. Like, you just don't do that in Japan. It's like, yeah, sure. You can't do that. It's like, trust is a very big factor here. Very, very big one. And they take it very seriously. Even not just like the fact how seriously you're taking their show, when you're there, it really matters to them. So trust is a big thing here. And it just kind of like in my system now.
So with getting your visa to go to Japan, you said you had to get a letter. Is that like a letter of recommendation from a Japanese
citizen?
Yeah, it's
basically a company asking, signing that they want me to come, basically. It's like a letter of invitation for that you do have a purpose to visit the country. You actually have a legitimate reason and you have this and that. I actually ended up, because I was 19, I couldn't really show them. It's a weird system. The thing would change for 1 minute, but the way it goes, now it's a bit different because we really have really good, India really has incredible relation with Japan right now. Like, we are investing a lot into each other's country. I think 2 years, they signed some paper on like January 2018 that they made it 4 times easier to visit Japan because they want more people to go back and forth and stuff. But while I was trying for it, it basically is like proving that you are not everything that you can imagine somebody who's bad. Let's imagine you are, and let's go one by one proving that you are not that. That is the process of immigration, which is very like backhand. It's like we are already imagining everything that is bad is in you. Let's just go and you prove to us 100% that you are not dead. Would you just stay in the, would you run away as for your visa and not show up? Prove that you will not. And as a 19 and a half year old who doesn't have a family of his own to be there or a job that is hanging in there or anything that is stopping me from just completely immersing myself here, I couldn't, like, I didn't even know why they rejected me, because they don't say ever why they reject your visa, that embassy would never give an answer or something. They would just say, try in 6 months, because you can't really try for the same visa, like right after. You can't try for the same visa in 6 months if you fail for a visa. So I would just, I'm like, okay, 6 months. Okay, let's think about it. And then I thought, like, if I try stupidly in 6 months, I wouldn't make it. So I spent 2 years in making a document file, basically, in proving every single one of those cases that it is not so. And it took me 2 years to complete it. So it took me 2 years to again apply for the visa again. And it took me 2 years to come back to Japan. And in those 2 years, I did nothing else. Because I am, as I told you, a very kind of hardened head. So I was very made sure that I wouldn't do any jobs. Because it would make it easy. You know, like waiting, not just wrestling, waiting to wrestle. Basically, that's what I was doing as a profession. So I can wrestle. It's not an easy thing to do. It's not satisfying in any sense. But if you do, let's just say if I get a job, I was kind of scared that I would let wrestling go. Because I've seen other people do so.
Yeah.
Especially in Southeast Asia. That's why people don't show up to Japan and just throw everything away. But which is good, because they are not as stupid as me. But like in hindsight, they are actually more proper people. Like, they're actually like more responsible. They have proper jobs and they have everything settled in and they are venturing out into wrestling, being secure. I, on the other hand, wasn't thinking that. I'm like, if I have any rope, any hope in any sense that I can run, I'm probably going to run from it. It's not any, like, it's not easy, like the situation I'm in. So I made sure that I would not have any permanent jobs or anything. I would just do part-time stuff. And I started my own company though. So I was wrestling like once a month. Me and actually a partner of mine, Vince, I call him Vince because his name is Vinayak, which is really, really, it started with, as a joke, like of me calling him. And it kind of became like a name in itself because his name was Vinayak and it perfectly goes into Vince if I showed it out. So I would just call him Vince and he go like, come on, dude. And I'm like, yeah, but it is. And then, in a few months, he just stopped saying it. And now his name is, in my head, is Vince. And most other people is calling Vince too. Like, So I would just, I just met, I met him in my, in the first match I actually had, which a fan of pro wrestling organized an event who had nothing to do with wrestling. And like he booked, do you know about like Dangal Ke Surma and like Ringa King, like the two things happened in India before? In wrestling, so which is like, it is incredible how many people know it, and how they know it is very embarrassing, but people know it, which is very good for reference. So what happened was, they showed up and they trained people for 1 month just they got bodybuilding dudes who looked kind of big, and they got them to train for kind of a month. Some people 2 weeks, some people 1 week, and they put them on TV. That's what actually happened. So right. That wrestling fan got one of those people who have trained 2 weeks in pro wrestling 5 years ago. That is it. And there was one person who kind of knew about wrestling. All of the other people were bodybuilders. And I went there thinking these are the wrestlers. So and the person who was actually like asked me to come there, I kind of knew him from like the, it's a very short, like very small community and all. So I kind of knew him. He messaged me through Facebook and stuff. And I went there. He goes like, you might have a match or not have a match. So we don't know. But if you want to, please show up. I'm like, okay, I showed up. And in the same sense, my friend, like who I started the company with, Vinayak, actually, who had worked with a kind of in merchandise side with both TNA and WWE previously in India, as in like, because they have like merchant stuff. And when they were doing Ring of King, he was like kind of working as a backstage person. So he was, he knew about wrestling and he kind of had a very foundational knowledge of the, how this works. So he showed up as well and we met there. Once he showed up like 1 day ago, he goes like, oh, of course you, like, of course I'll put you in the match. I'm like, okay. Then he started asking like how to make a match. I'm like, okay, how about this and this? And he thought like, okay, this guy's going to do this. So, like my role in a match became bigger and bigger and bigger. So we kind of like really, really, really got well. It was a good meeting, let's just say. And he had no wrestler of, like, he didn't have the wrestling part, anything. He had the administrative part and the backstage part. And he could do that work, like, you know, managing the company and stuff, because he has done that backstage. But he didn't have no wrestler to start anything. And I had no framework, because I'm just a wrestler. I had no business thing of the thing. And he did that. So it was like a very good fit. And by the way, just to side note for the match, I actually, my first match, I wrestled for 48, I think, minutes. It was a one match show and it was an elimination show. And it was by all meaning a shoot match because nobody knew how to wrestle. No joke. I was the only one who kind of knew who wrestled and people just was throwing each other off. And because nobody was letting anybody do anything. So because I was the only person who knew if somebody, like, you know, how this goes. So if somebody throws me, I let, you know, I would work with them. And because I was the only one who's working with anyone, everybody was working kind of with me. So I was getting beat up like for 30 minutes. And I'm like, this is not like, it was a bizarre experience. I'm just, let's just say that. I think I actually have it that match or something. It was a starting fitting to my wrestling career. I think it was very, very fitting that I started that way. It really was. It was like a free for all for like 55 minutes. I stayed in for like 48 of them. So amazing. Yeah, I will never forget that match. But we ended up meeting, I ended up meeting him and I started the company. We started a company called Russell Square. It still works in there. We actually did a TV show 2 years ago in India for Discovery Sports, a new channel in India. So he is really doing well. We have a dojo now, an actual place people can wrestle, a good team, like especially after Kali and all. So just Kali's place is very expensive. It's like the same money you would spend in UK to train. And that is a lot of money compared to like India's standards. So it's like a very affordable option as well for people who can't really go to Kali place. They can go to our dojo and really train and stuff with actual people who know of the business and stuff. So it's really going well. It's still doing very well. Yeah.
And that's Wrestle Square, did you say?
Wrestle Square, yes.
Wrestle Square. Okay. Yes. I must look that up.
Very bizarre. You can, if you have any, like if you can keep the train of thought of what I've told you about me, that's the thought that goes into making a Russell Square as well. So it is a wild, wild west story of how we made that too.
Good stuff.
Good is good stuff.
So you've become a really indispensable part of Gato Move and Choco Pro. How would you describe Gato Move and Choco Pro to fans that are unfamiliar with? What goes on there?
Okay, let's start with Gato Move. because Gatomu was the hardest thing for me to figure out as a wrestler. It was the bar to perform was the highest of all the places I've wrestled anywhere for Gatomu. Their quality control, you could say, is very high, stupidly high. And the people who perform there are very good. It just, it's hard to believe, like, the quality of wrestlers, especially male wrestlers, because they are newcomers in girls there. Like, Joshi wrestlers are, there's, like, Mei-chan showed up as a new one. Like, you know, there's, like, newcomers come in there wrestling as a newcomer. But for guys wrestlers, only the wrestlers who wrestle there. So everyone is, like, 15 years into business, like Masa Takanashi, Chon Siryu, Shinno Hagane. Like, those dudes are, like, fundamentally, if you wrestle them, it's frustrating how good they are in what they do. Like, I remember having that feeling. And I think because of that, I graduated very hard into Gatomu. Their style is, it is chaos. If you see, like, a six-man tag from Gatomu on a YouTube channel, it is hard to believe six people are wrestling there, you know, on that mat. And it looks, like, super chaotic. But everything that they do is perfectly how they want it to do. It is like chaos by design, which is the hardest thing to make in, like, if I really want to make something. Like, if I really just, like, people just going crazy while they're actually being crazy, it is easy to do so. Or being very, very perfect in what you do is actually very, like, it's easier to do something perfectly than to do it in, like, chaotic way and still do it as good as, like, you were hoping to do so. So, because the bar was of wrestling was so high and I couldn't really perform at the level I wanted to because they were really good. Like, for other companies, I actually wrestled a lot of indie companies when I showed up here because I started wrestling for DDT, which actually was a good venue for other companies to actually watch me and kind of book me. But, like really actually indie shows that just wrestlers get together and, like, produce. And it a lot of indie shows goes in that in Tokyo as well. So I started doing them and Gatomu and DDT. So it became in, like, I graduated more and more into Gatomu because that was the hardest. It was really hard to do. I just couldn't do it. I would always mess up. And I couldn't even figure out how I messed up. It was, like, really hard for me to conceptualize their style and do it in their style and do it good too. So, and also the wrestlers who were wrestling there, I really thought if I want to become a good wrestler, this is, like, the best place I can hope to be so as a performer to really grow. And I really graduated hard on that side. I would just, I prioritize Gatomu's booking, like, in a sense so much that I actually let go of most of my independent bookings. Like, and I would say no. I'm in no position to say no to anybody in Japan when I was there. So if you say no, I'm like, come on, dude, you're going to say no, dude, like, now? So I actually ended up giving up on most of the companies by within, like, 10 months of in the 8 months, actually shorter, 6 months of my beginning career. I said no to enough companies that I would mostly get booked on Gatomu and DDT because those are the only two places I was, like, really focusing on. And I kind of ended up just wrestling for those two. It became at some point that I was, like, wrestling every Gatomu show. Because I would say yes to every Gatomu show and I would say no to, like, if it's Gatomu booking that on the same day, I wouldn't take other places. And for some, like, it just trickled down into more and more Gatomu. And their way of mixing lighthearted wrestling so people can enjoy it and not feel like they don't have to pull back. Make sure that the audience in any point of the match don't have to pull back from you, but keep them engaged enough that it is still a fight. And that thin line of walking in there to making it still a fight, but not, like, hard or ugly enough that they have to pull back, not enough in an intensity that they kind of have to, like, go, but not easy enough that they can just relax and think they can just have fun. Like, having them in there and manipulating them in where, as an audience, as to when I want them to really just kind of like really believe into what's happening, really easily ease into the match. And then when the intensity ramps up, they can still stay with me when it ramps up. And really having the highs and lows so they can kind of go like, oh, like having them feel all the kind of emotions that I want them to feel so they can have a good time. And it's really hard, hardly embedded into Gotamon's style as to how the audience would feel when we do this. That is how they go about in that style. And I'm Sakura is, of all the people I have met ever, is the most conscious of how the wrestling looks and how you feel when you watch what we do. That is the biggest question. Anything else comes after, literally anything and everything, including business and money and company and big, becoming bigger or becoming like anything, no joke, even if it's hard, everything comes That's after incredible. The quality of the match, the quality of the match or what we are putting out comes that. And it's called, in Japanese, there's a word called omoshiroi, but it's a very difficult word because funny is called omoshiroi and interesting is also called omoshiroi. So it's like if you sometimes it's because Japanese style is such a rough and strong style, it's sometimes, as in for most bigger companies, as it says, as like a slang, somebody like it's a funny wrestling, would they would still call it omoshiroi. And for us, we would show it, we want to do interesting wrestling, like wrestling that is fun and interesting and is something. So for Ami Sakura, it has to be interesting, first and foremost. We are willing to try anything as long as it is not boring, as long as it's interesting. It can be intense and interesting. It can be lighthearted and interesting. It can be funny kind of and interesting. Anything is okay, as long as it's interesting. We'll try it. And it is interesting enough that we will put it on our show. That is basically how Gotamon works. As in like their style. It's interesting. That's how Ami Sakura looks at it. And it takes, it took me a long time to really figure out how she thinks, because she's a genius in her, how she conceptualizes wrestling. And as you know, geniuses are not really good at explaining stuff. So perfectly in that sense as well. She is like, she's not good at like conveying what goes in her. It is very funny. She just, sometimes she would just in talk to you and you go like, what are you talking about? And she would literally say, oh, it's perfectly connected in my head. Like she actually says it. I'm not joking. She says it. It's actually, oh, sorry. It's actually perfectly connected in my head. But I just jumped to like 10 points in the conversation. So hold on a sec. Then she goes back and tells you Perfect. Like kind of so you can track down. Oh, okay. I get it. Like we started about, okay, when is the next show? And she would jump to a spot that she wants to do in a match. And we go, huh? And they go, oh, hold on a sec. Actually, like in my train of thoughts, I actually went from here to here. And now we're actually doing this. So hold on a sec. Let's move on little by little to where we are. So she, I'm not, like, cool. It's a very common occasion too. Like everybody kind of knows it. She says it very often. Like literally, if I translate it from Japanese to in English, what she really says, it's connected in my head. And then if we are talking about like what, it's like very easy to talk about Choco Pro actually. If you talked about, like we talked about Gotamon. At this point, when it's like Gotamon made specifically for the times and necessity of the time and necessity we were put on, and that is Choco Pro. Ami Sakura asked me, do you know about Super Chat? And I'm like, what is that? And she goes, it's like something on YouTube. And I checked it. I'm like, this is awesome. I think we can do something with it. Us having that conversation, and we were doing the first Choco Pro, and I was wrestling Minoru Suzuki. Within 40 something hours of that conversation.
Gosh. Wow.
That is like, it is connected in her head. That is how she just jumps, skips all the net stuff that was in between. And she goes, okay, can we do that? Are we applicable to do that? I go, I can check. And I check and I go, yes, I think your according to like how it's set, PR actually do that. And she goes, okay. And the next day, the day before the show, is like around 18 hours before, she just goes, "You're wrestling Minoru Suzuki." I'm like, there's actually a video of that. She told me on video. she told me that. And she actually posted it. So anybody, like, I will always know down what my reaction was to realizing I was wrestling Minoru Suzuki in like 18 hours.
Yeah. Amazing.
Was it a combination of joy and fear?
I was taken aback. I know she was, it wasn't like a joke or anything, but it was hard to process how I feel about it. How do you say that? It was such so much out of my conceptualization of what would happen that I couldn't really process it in like a very fast way. I went from shock to joy to like, "You're not messing with me, right?" to again joy to again like, "Hold on a sec, really?" And then like, it was a series of going back and forth in those for like quite some time.
That's very cool.
Would you agree it was probably your biggest singles
match to
that point? You know, like the match with the biggest star?
As in like signified as well. I think I've learned more in that match than I would in like a year if I was just independently wrestling. It is actually one of the biggest reasons I left for London, because I kind of felt stuck in my progress in Japan at one point, because I was really becoming, I was just a Japanese wrestler. I became like a Japanese wrestler in 2.5 years. I would just go to places, wrestle. How was the wrestling? Good. Promoters would be happy and I would come back. And I wanted to have like some spark to either have it hard and jump to the next step. And that match was really helpful. It really solidifies what is not independent wrestling, you could say. Like how you go from the mindset of a wrestler is very different. It's really hard to convey it in words, but that was one of my most learned and most frustrating match ever. I haven't thought about a match more than that match. Because it is a very nice experience, very, very nice one. And because I was so frustrated after the match of what I couldn't do and I could have done and why I wouldn't do it, why I couldn't do it, and like how it came about and what I should strive to be as a wrestler. Like a lot of actually fundamental questions brought kind of back up when I had that match.
Was it something like, I often hear people say, you only get better when you wrestle people that are better than you. And then you've gone to wrestling one of the absolute best. Mm. So that gulf between your level of skill and Minoru Suzuki, who's an all-time great, his level of skill, it must have been so frustrating seeing that greatness up close and personal. And you're like, I want to do that.
Like, and also, it's like, okay, if you really are technical about it, watching a wrestler from a wrestler's point of view and watching a wrestler from an audience point of view is very different in a sense, because what I am comparing and what I'm looking for is very different from when I was watching it as an audience member. What I am looking for as right now is, if you can, let's just say, if a wrestler can do 100 things, he does 5 in a match. What I choose to do is what defines me as a wrestler. And when I was wrestling, let's just say the things I could do and Minoru Suzuki could do in, as an athletic wise, I should and kind of possibly do more in every sense of the wave physically than Minoru Suzuki. Athletic wise, jumping wise, power, I think Minoru Suzuki is definitely more more strong. But other than that, physically, I should be able to do more than him in every sense of the way. He's actually very injured as well. He's like, it is phenomenal how he wrestles in that shape, because he is very, like, he has a lot of injuries. His knees are like stuck in there. But so the way the wrestling I see, which is very romantic way of saying it, but wrestling I see and the wrestling he was seeing is very different. And you can't teach that. That is why I think people love, and they say you need to wrestle better wrestlers. it was like almost like a culture shock to what he was seeing as what we were doing and what I was seeing as in what we were doing. And that gap in that scenery we see as a wrestler really sparked a lot of things in me, which I'm really happy about.
Mm.
It also made, like, woke a lot of things up that I had kind of let go or in the process of becoming a Japanese wrestler. So it was a very surreal experience, mostly after the match, because the match went okay, the way I think about it. It went the way it was supposed to go. It also went the way how Japanese wrestling summer. It's like, you're not supposed to, if you're wrestling somebody who's a legend like Minoru Suzuki, and I'm like somebody who's like right here, and Minoru Suzuki is like not even in the same plane that I am as a wrestler, the story in every sense of the way, except Japanese matches, would be me standing up to him. Can I stand up to the king?
Mm.
Like, mm-hmm. is the thing. Especially, that is how, like, you can actually see that how Japanese wrestling is, how Japanese fans conceptualize wrestling in that sentence as well. Would somebody who's here, will Aki be able to stand up to, it's not about moves, it's not about cool things, it's not even about anything else. It's not even about me doing a lot of things to him or damaging him at all. It's about me just standing up to him. Can I stand up to him? That is basically how the match is. And that question is very not how wrestling goes. It's about what you do most of the time. And in that match, it is nothing about it at all. So that culture shock of how it went just sparked like really, really nice things. I'm really happy I did. It's incredibly happy how I did that.
Yeah, that's an absolutely fascinating insight, genuinely. I mean, I think, I don't think I've ever heard anybody put it like that, but it makes so much sense, you know, that you've got, if you say you've got two guys that both know how to do 100 different things, but it's the experience that tells you which 5 things to do. That's what sort of... That's truly interesting. Okay.
It's pretty wonderful, though, that that match with Minoru Suzuki almost brought your journey up to that point in wrestling full circle. You've gone from being exposed to Minoru Suzuki in New Japan.
I actually told that to Emi Sakura, and she was like, what? I'm like, yeah.
That basically flicked a switch in you. You went, you know, I like wrestling, to I have to wrestle in Japan no matter what. And here you are, four or five years later, wrestling the man that started that journey. You know, it's almost like a storybook ending. You know, if they were making a film,
that would be the end of the film. Like, this is a part of the movie where you go, come on, you're making that up. Even if it's a documentary, that is you're telling me the world hit a pandemic and you met the wrestler that kind of made you come to Japan. And now you're doing a thing with no people, own mat, no ring either. And you're doing that kind of wrestling and you're wrestling Minoru Suzuki. Come on, dude. There's a limit to how much lie you can put in a movie. That is the point of the movie. Yeah, it is. But it was very nice. And it also put, like, if you talk about specifically of Choco Pro, I remember Emi Sakura very clearly saying she doesn't want to do Gato move without audience. Emi Sakura hates the word without audience. I'm not joking. It's really hard to say. And she says that too. She, in the beginning, because Choco Pro, at one point, we were the only wrestling in the world who was still wrestling. So she actually did one interview one time, and it was kind of really hard because she was trying to tell them, it is not without audience. We have an audience. There's like 300 people watching us on YouTube live. There's everything in YouTube. Literally everything you can imagine is on YouTube, and people are still watching us. That is a big deal. And like, especially to me, like, I'm like, that is incredible that they're like people showing up on a platform that has everything. And they gave us watching online, woke up on time. People are waking up at 3:30 in the morning in America to see that show. And like, that is pretty hard to ask somebody to do for like 4:30, 5:30 in the morning. And people wanted to say, there was actually a word for in Japan called mukankyaku, which means no audience shows. And Amisaka would very adamantly say, it is no, there is an audience. I'm wrestling for them. I can't accept the fact that I'm wrestling for no audience. I am wrestling for an audience. It's just that the audience happens to be just one standpoint. Everything that is not in that frame doesn't exist, is how she thinks about wrestling.
Yeah.
She wanted to say, I want to start something new. Two things why she wanted to start something new. First is that she doesn't want to have a Gato move with no audience. She wants to make something new that is specifically made for what we are about to do. Chocopro is not a wrestling that is a wrestling show without an audience. It is a show made just for that format where the audience is not present in live and in fact are in, across the screen. It is a format specifically designed for that in her head. So mm-hmm. that is how she wanted. And number two, the fact is that she said, and I quote, right now is a time where everything is stopping and I want to have, and I would do something in that I want to start something. The world is stopping. Literally everything is what we know as of is stopping. Mm. And I want to start something because everything is stopping. I want to start something right now, something new.
Gosh.
I want to, because every wrestling that has ever done, a great ones, like literally, we don't even know if it would come back because that was a very uncertain time as well. We had no idea. Like the world has no idea. It might go to hell. Like at that point, like it was very suddenly scary time, especially in Japanese wrestling as well. Mm-hmm. But she very clearly said to me, because it's so bleak right now, we should start new. Because it is so hard, we should start a new company. We shouldn't start it because, you know, for any other reason. The very reason people don't want me to start a new company is the reason we should start a company. Because there is no hope. She was basically saying that. And the message is, to this day, I get when people say it gave them hope. I'm like, how? It's really hard to see that she's so that of all the things that were happening. Like, Gatomo is not a big company. They can't manage a 6 months hiatus. They just can't. They would have gone under 100%. Gatomo 100% would have gone under. They can't, like, with no zero income for 6 months and all the expenses they have to pay about their dojos and their, like, dormitories because the wrestlers live there and stuff. And all the other things encompassing as well. It's not a rich, it's a very small company. And see, to undertake, even still, to undertake, and make sure all the wrestlers get paid, even though it was like that, to make sure she starts something new so more people can have hope. To think of hope when people are kind of trying to keep the floods in, it's just like, no, we have to move on. Wrestling will never be the same. I'm not mm-hmm. joking. She said that to me the day before we started ChocoPro, is that we have to think of something new, because if you want to just keep the old thing in, it's going to be very hard. And as a Gato move, we don't have the luxury to be able to hold on. We don't have that much strength in us. We are not that deep that people, like, just enemy just can roll us down and we still can bring up the reinforcement. We can't do that. So we have to just evolve with what we have. And because it is so hard, we need to start something new. We need to have hope.
I think what you're talking about there is sort of quite a revolutionary mindset, yeah. really. And I mean, the idea of just reframing quote unquote no fans and actually saying, well, hold on, there are fans, they're just behind this lens, yeah. so everything is played to that lens. Mm. It's so ahead of the curve, really, you know, because you've got so many companies that throughout the pandemic have tried to put on shows as if nothing's changed.
Yes.
And it has changed.
It's
changed.
You know,
it's, yeah, absolutely.
You can't.
It's the way to go.
You can't ignore something that made me stay in my home for 1 month. And I like wrestling. I want to see it. Like, it is the basics of the basic. People say you need to connect to your fans. Well, I can't really connect to you if I'm going to ignore what is making your life miserable. And also, they did ignore it. I think ChocoPro is the company that ignored the pandemic the most. Because, and I quote, please, like, She's going to, if she, but it's okay. She won't understand. It's in English. So she won't get angry at me. But it has never once been said on our programming in the last 8 months. The word pandemic or the name COVID has not, or the name of the virus, has never been said once in our programming. And we have never, even once, showed any kind of downside of it. It is what is still bright is shown, is her vision of ChocoPro. What is still bright, like there's enough worry to have everywhere else. I don't really need to make you remind of COVID. You can't forget about it, really.
No.
All here is an escape. It is a part where you can show up and smile. And we smile because you show up, and you smile because we are here. It's like a very equal exchange. And
I was going to say, it definitely comes across, I think, that it is a promotion built on hope and a promotion built on joy. And I think that trickles down even into the fans of the promotion. You know, as I was saying before we started recording as well, even just the live YouTube chat is just full of hope and joy and friendliness. I've never been in a like live chat for a wrestling show or anything for that matter where there's not some negativity or toxicity, and it's just an absolute joy being a part of the ChocoPro community.
Yeah, it is a joy. I actually have gotten to know, like, I only know them by their like YouTube display picture, but and their name they have.
Yeah.
By the way, YouTube names that you call out on chats is I'm never getting used to them. I've been doing that for 8 months now, but I will never get used to it. Like X Death and Flying Dragon and like calling people normally. Because I'm talking to you as a person. When I do that, when we talk in chat, I'm actually talking to you like you are a person out there. But calling you like high, like there's a fan of us who's called High Five Flow. I think he's a Hiroshi Tanahashi fan. You can tell that very easily. But to just call out somebody who's like, calling out somebody brainbuster is like, you're never gonna get used to it. It is one of the most joyful things to do. I think that is one of the reasons why people say it is so mysteriously that you don't realize. It just doesn't feel lonely. That is how you feel when you see people. When I saw like WrestleMania, especially, that was a really big one because I wasn't watching other wrestlings a lot at that point. I was very, like, very, very busy. And we did a watching party for WrestleMania, and it felt so lonely. So, because the wrestlers are working extra hard because they can't have that feedback. They're used to that. It's like a comedian not getting laughs. And you go hard on the jokes, and the harder you go, the harder it doesn't work. It's like a very downward spiral. But it felt lonely. That's how I felt, at least, watching it. And you don't feel that when you watch ChocoPro. And I think because you don't have a structure that you need to make sure to put ChocoPro in. We don't have that framework. It's like we started new and it is completely for what we have right now. So you can make it anything that you want it to be in that sense. Is that we are not supposed to have somebody and I wrestle for that somebody and you're just watching me. No, that is nothing. It is you and me. I wrestle here for you. And you reply to me. It's like a very direct connection. Everything that is not in the scene of this camera does not exist. The only wrestling that is happening is what you see. It is just here. Actually, she says that. Ami Sakura, I think, quoted that in a non-wrestling magazine that was doing an interview for her because she started ChocoPro in like such a time. she said that in like, basically the only wrestling that exists is in that camera frame, which is really hard to put your head around unless you like really think of how it is presented. If you think of it as a presenter, then you kind of like, okay, makes sense. But if you're as like, who's kind of conceptualizing live shows, you go like, hold on a sec. Of course it exists if it's not in the camera, but like, because all the fans are there, like it's like here. So only this thing exists. And I think I kept you guys way longer, but still, if I have to really like say one more thing at the end of it, one of the things about Gautam Move is because it is such a unique way of how they want to do it, and they would not budge. MS Agarwal would never budge in what he wants to do and what kind of business he has for wrestling. It is no joke that before Gautam Move and now Choco Pro did not exist in the mass media of professional wrestling in Japan. We do not exist. Mm-hmm. We exist way more in America and UK and the West. And I have had done more interviews and podcasts, and we have more coverage, a lot more coverage in the West that is like 14 hours away from me than I have in Japan. In Japan, wow. They have zero coverage. If I'm a wrestling fan and I don't find wrestling Twitter and people tag me for hashtag Choco Pro, I can never find it anywhere else. No articles, no results, nobody putting it up, nobody putting it up, nothing. If I'm just a regular wrestling fan and I don't like dwell into independent wrestling and watch stuff, I can't even stumble on into it. Literally, Choco Pro is spread by word of mouth. Like, it is very known. It is a very 21st century wrestling, as in it is only on the internet, but it is spreading like 80s or 90s wrestling, because it is really word of mouth. Like, people tell other people to watch Choco Pro, and then they watch Choco Pro and they go, this is kind of fun. And then they just, like, most of them just stay and they still watch us, which is very, very helpful. Even if you guys, I think, told us, like, somebody told you guys, our guys about us to, like, enough people, like Choco, please check out Choco Pro and stuff.
Yeah, honestly, this is now episode 10. So since we've started this, Choco Pro is the company that the most people have been asking us to cover. And interestingly enough as well, I'll give a shout out to our friend Mr. Haku from DDT.
Oh, yes.
Who also recommended having a chat, you know, and he said just how wholesome it is, and you know, he's not wrong. So high praise indeed. But rest assured, we'll keep talking about Choco Pro on Inside the Ropes.
Thank you very much.
So next week,
yes,
we're going to be covering the next episode of Choco Pro.
Oh, thank you very much.
Tell everybody about it.
Yes.
Can you give us a little preview as to what people can expect?
The next show we are having is actually Reset versus Best Bros, me and May Saruga. We're actually not a tag team. I actually faced her most of my career. We are always put against each other. It's like we are better opponents. I think to this day, we are better opponents than we are tag team partners. It's easier for me to think what I would like to do with her when I wrestle instead of what you did together. To this day, most of the thing we do as a tag team is like opponent sense, just turn into other people. But we just kind of genuinely friends. That is how it is. One time, May's mom asked her, I think somebody in the chat asked her, does he have friends? It is really important. Like MS Agarwal said, it is really important to have friends to stay in wrestling, because it's especially pretty hard in like a career-wise. It is a pretty hard business. And if you have friends, you can have fun and it's easier to stay longer. And she goes, do you have any friends? He goes, but like in Tokyo, like, yeah, like only one who's there. He says, Aki. And I'm sort of like, what? Really? I'm like, that is insulting. In every sense of, I'm sitting right here. And she goes, no. Like, but still, so sad for you, Mei-chan, that Aki is your only friend. Like, so I think, especially after the pandemic, we were really, 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 like, we were really friends even before, like, before I left Japan and stuff. But when I came back, especially after the pandemic, we would just, you know, we were doing Choco Pros, and most of the time, the only two people I would ever meet is those two people, unless I'm doing a show, like a Choco Pro show. So me and May are like just genuinely friends. And I was teaching her English, and she goes, and I think I called somebody bro in the chat. Somebody said something cocky, and I go like, come on, bro. And she goes, what is that? I'm like, okay, it's really hard to like translate bro in Japanese. So I kind of told her like what it means. And she goes, yeah, we are bros. And we did that. And somebody came up with the name Best Bros, and we were a team. We were actually a tag team before we even wrestled on Choco Pro together at all. We were kind of like a live stream tag team. So, and that is us. We are just like, yeah, we are fighting most of often. Like, May is really easy to annoy. So just anything you do, she's very, very easy to annoy. She laughs and gets annoyed and fights with me most of the time, even when the camera is not on. Like, I'm not joking. She's her. I can't imagine how it hits me every time when I realize she's 21. Because I'm not joking. When she eats something tasty, her feet goes like this. Like a four-year-old. And even when the camera is not on. Like, if you're doing a live stream, if the camera is here, right? If she's saying this is delicious, her feet are going like this. Because when she sits on the chair, her feet doesn't touch the ground. It really doesn't. It's just like this above ground. Her feet go like TV. And she still does that when she's like eating just her own lunch, which is incredible to me. And it's really easy to tease. She's really easy to tease and she gets angry and stuff. But on the contrast, and also like because she's very athletic and very phenomenal in her wrestling, so I can really let go and I can just like I can. It's like I'm always competing with her when I'm tagging with her. It is a very weird kind of tag team because I really does. It's like I'm wrestling more of her when I'm wrestling than my opponents because I'm definitely not going to lose at least to her in at least movement or speed or preciseness or something. Because we do like a lot of running around when we wrestle like as a tag team. And to be on point is very important, especially because she's going to show up. So I still have more of a rivalry than a tag team. And for Reset, on the other hand, they are a very strong bond since the start of Gotham Move, I think. Because Yoneyama Kaori accompanied Aimee Sakura to Thailand, went with her, stayed with her, taught a lot of Thai wrestlers together with her. And they have done everything together, almost. Like, they're actually going to have a live stream the day after tomorrow on about Reset. And actually, tonight, we're going to have a live stream around 9 p.m., I think, about the best bros of how we like the tag team part of it, because we are mostly just having fun when we're online. But and we're gonna have I think I'm gonna translate probably for the Reset when they're gonna talk how just not about Yoneyama Kaori but mostly about Reset and how the team came about. But they have done everything together. They have done like a Kamikiri match. Kamikiri means like hair versus hair match. They have had done that's why Aimee Sakura, spoiler alert, Aimee Sakura went bold. So, yeah, they have done everything. They are, as they go as deep. Aimee Sakura started wrestling 2 months before I was born. And wow. Yes, her career is older than me. And even before I had any idea of wrestling, they were tagging together. That is how long they go as opponents and as partners. So it is like, there's two of the team that I really wanted to face as best bros because I've never actually had a team, like a team that I would really, like, really want to go forward with. And now that I have with me in best bros, there was two teams I really wanted to face. One was Reset and one was Yakin Thunders, Aimee Sakura and Masa Takanashi. So Masa Takanashi is really injured right now and he's actually coming back on 29th of January. But yeah, those are the team I really wanted to face. So it's almost a dream match for me. I really wanted to test myself against Reset at least once because, like, they are phenomenal. If you watch them, they are, goddamn, they are like, gives me goosebumps thinking about it. Yes.
Likewise. I can't wait to talk about this next week.
You've definitely sold us on that match.
This has been an absolutely wonderful conversation. Thank you so, so much for taking the time to have a talk with us and tell everybody about your just incredible journey and also the wonders of Gutter Move and Chocker Pro. If you haven't checked it out, now is the time to check it out, undoubtedly. But Balianaki, we give you all of our thanks. Thank you so much.
Thank you very, very much thank for you. Having me on. This has been fun.
And thank you once again to the wonderful Balianaki. No. What a great time that was for both of us.
Really was. That absolutely flew by, that conversation. And what, just a lovely, charming man, very open, very honest, and just the most fascinating insight to the road less trodden in terms of wrestling. It really was so interesting. So thank you, Balian, friend of the show. Look forward to having you back to talk about more Gato Move and Chocker Pro in the future.
So if you're listening to this the day that it comes out, which is Friday, we're going to be covering on next week's show. We talked about the tag team match that Balian's going to be participating in. So Friday night / Saturday morning, 1 a.m. on Saturday the 5th is the next Choco Pro Show, which that tag team match takes place on, streaming for free on YouTube. Make sure you check it out, and then you can listen to our thoughts all about that next week on the show.
Absolutely, yeah. Come join us, and, you know, do make sure, you know, to express yourself. Let us know what you think. You can contact us on the socials. You know where we're at by now, Twitter and Instagram, @WrestlingPod, that's wrestling about the E. Or send us an email, again, it's wrestlingpod@gmail.com, wrestling about the E. But genuinely, we'd be so interested to know what you think. If you haven't experienced Choco Pro before, this is a fantastic jumping on point, particularly with all that insight from Balian. So, you know, really do get in those comments and let us know what the deal is. Anyway, cracking show. Thoroughly enjoyed that. 10 episodes, man. Genuinely can't believe it.
So, double digits.
Yeah, double digits. Cheers to you, my man. Cheers to Inside the Ropes. And cheers, most importantly, to all you fine folk for downloading this. And so all that's left to say is, until next time, stay safe, stay happy, and enjoy the graps.